facebook.com/KPFT Houston.
Number is 713-526-5738. You are listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM Houston. You can also go to my website in order to get a little background on whatever we're talking about typically on any given night, thinkwingradio.com. You can tweet me, but not right now because I don't have my computer, at Think Wing Radio. And my engineer tonight, as usual, is Egberto Willis, and every once in a while he'll chime in because he has useful and interesting things to say. Little old business from last week, and, well, first let me say this. We do have elections coming up in May. May 10th, there is a special election for Senatorial District 4. And then there are the regular runoffs for the Republican and Democratic primaries on May 27th, because the way to save money and increase turnout is to split elections up as much as possible. That's how we do that. Last week, I made a reference to a quote that I sometimes use as a signature on my email. I didn't want to misquote it because I enjoy it too much. It's from the, I think, underrated, underappreciated series Reaper that was on, I think, from 2007 to 2009. It was in an episode called Business Casualty, and the quote is from Ray Wise, who was playing the devil. This is what the devil said. "Did you know, beginning in the late 19th century, corporations were granted all the rights of the individual, but none of the annoying responsibilities? They lack, almost by design, any kind of moral compass, conscience, or compassion. Basically, corporations are a way to enact sociopathic behavior on a grand scale. In short, they're what makes this country so damn great." So, I think we can paraphrase that by saying that if corporations are people, they're people who are sociopaths. Just something to make you feel better. Okay, we have open lines. I am hoping we'll have some conversation this week. The phone number is 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. Well, last week we were almost on the cusp of tax day. We are now the day after tax day. I'm hoping everybody came out of that okay, bank accounts and sanity intact. In the course of our discussions on various aspects of taxes, taxation, tax rules, etc., one of the things that came up was Social Security and payroll taxes. And we talked about the reasons why Social Security is essentially a flat tax, a regressive tax, in essence, that 6 or 7% comes out of your payroll, and a roughly equal amount comes out of your employer's income toward your Social Security, and that when you're self-employed, you have to pay both ends of that. And, you know, I thought because Social Security was a subject of discussion, Social Security taxes, FICA taxes, are a subject of discussion, I kind of made up my mind last week as I left the studio that I was going to talk a little about the background of Social Security. So in that realm, first I want to say that I personally believe, and this is not just because of Social Security, but I personally believe that if we were to add another president to Mount Rushmore, it would be Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Any liberal, and most Americans would agree, that among his greatest achievements was the Social Security Act of 1935. And when FDR signed that bill, he had a signing statement. And I've excerpted it. I have a link to the statement in its entirety for tonight's show on my website, thinkwingradio.com. But I want to read the excerpt. FDR said, in part, "The civilization of the past 100 years," this is 1935, "the civilization of the past 100 years, with its startling industrial changes, has tended more and more to make life insecure. Young people have come to wonder what would be their lot when they came to old age. The man with a job has wondered how long the job would last. We can never insure 100% of the population against 100% of the hazards and vicissitudes of life, but we have tried to frame a law which will give some measure of protection to the average citizen and to his family against the loss of a job and against poverty-ridden old age." That was FDR's signing statement, August 14, 1935, when he signed the Social Security Act. Probably more than any other single piece of legislation in American history, almost certainly in the 20th century, with the possible exception of one or two, maybe. Probably the Social Security Act of 1935 changed the very fabric of life in the United States from that day forward in ways that people today cannot even grasp. We've all grown up with it there. We take it for granted. We assume it. And 80 years ago, it didn't exist, and I don't think Americans today could even visualize it. And, because many things never change, conservatives were against it, vilified it, argued that... I actually am thinking of making this a contest. What was one of the arguments that Republicans used against Social Security? It's going to be a familiar argument, and it's not rocket science, but I would just be curious to see how many callers it takes to figure out what one of the most profound arguments conservatives, Republicans used to argue against the Social Security Act. 713-526-5738. Conservatives to this day don't like Social Security. Here's what Social Security did. Social Security provided money to states for assistance to aged individuals. Title II, that was Title I. Title II was the Social Security Act. Title III provided for unemployment insurance. Title IV provided aid to families with dependent children. Title V provided aid for maternal and child welfare. Title VI provided money for public health services. Title X provided money for the blind. I mean, think about this. In one bill, it literally changed how America worked. It literally changed everybody from being one step away from total disaster to being maybe one step away from serious, serious life inconvenience, as opposed to collapse, living under bridges, not having food to eat. I mean, you don't live well on this kind of help, but you live. Apparently, for reasons related to concerns about the constitutionality of the 1935 Act, the taxing provisions, which were actually in Title VIII, were replaced in 1939 by the Social Security Act of 1939, which created FICA, the Federal Insurance Contributions Act. So when you see your Social Security payroll taxes, they're not called Social Security payroll taxes. They're called FICA because there was this little tussle about constitutionality. In terms of the evolution of Social Security, in 1935, all workers in commerce and industry, except railroads, because they had their own stuff, under age 65 got covered. In 1939, the age restriction was eliminated for seamen. Age restriction was eliminated. Seamen, which is to say sailors, and bank employees were added. And additional domestic workers and food processing workers were actually removed. In 1946, railroad and Social Security earnings combined to determine eligibility for and amount paid to survivors. In 1950, regularly employed farm and domestic workers were added. Non-farm self-employed, except professionals, were added. Federal civilian employees, not under retirement system, were added. Americans employed outside the U.S. by an American employer were added. Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands were added. At the option of each state, the state and local government employees not under an existing retirement system were added. Now, this is all in 1950. This is under Truman. Nonprofit organizations could elect coverage for their employees other than ministers. Then in 1951, railroad workers with less than 10 years of service were added for all benefits, and that in October became retroactive all the way back to 1937. So there were some lump sum payments out there. In 1954, the farm self-employed were added. Professional self-employed, except lawyers, dentists, doctors, and other medical groups were added. Additional regularly employed farm and domestic workers were added. So, I mean, this is essentially a litany of expansion, inclusion, coverage, and for the most part, moderate Republicans are on board with a lot of these. We have a caller, and I've got more stuff, but that's okay. We've got a caller, Robert from Houston. You're on the air. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. What's up?
Okay, you were asking a question of what the biggest arguments conservatives used against Social Security?
Yes.
It would create dependency, a culture of dependency.
That is an argument, but it was not the one I was looking for.
Not the one.
Not the one. But that's okay.
That's okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're only talking about a Thinkwing attaboy here as a prize. So do you have any thoughts on Social Security, pro, con, sideways, the history?
I'm definitely pro. It's been working in place for over 70 years, probably another 70 years to go. And I think all this anti-Social Security thing, they just want to privatize it so Wall Street can get fees on people trading stocks and bonds and everything. So don't change it. Don't change a thing.
You know, I'll tell you something that I've actually been thinking about. You know that back in the Bush administration, the W. Bush administration, he was trying as one of his signature pieces of proposed legislation to privatize Social Security. Essentially, people would deposit money and it would be run kind of like your 401k. My personal opinion, I don't do so good with my 401k, but I would go this far. I would love it if I could opt to put my 401k money in a government-guaranteed pension that would give me a guaranteed rate of return above the rate of inflation, because, frankly, at managing my 401k, I suck. What do you think?
Well, for it, also, there should be some state banks, like I think North Dakota or South Dakota has, and avoid all this bank bailouts and all this other things. Bring back Glass-Steagall, too.
Yes, I think we definitely have to bring back Glass-Steagall. The Republican Congress, with the cooperation, I think is the politest word I could use, of President Clinton, whom I generally like, they repealed Glass-Steagall because, you know, we're so much smarter than all those folks in the 1920s and 30s. We're not going to do those stupid things again.
Right.
Yeah. You know, there's a science fiction author by the name of Jack McDevitt. And a few months ago, I went to something called the 100-Year Starship Project Conference, and he was one of the panelists there. And he made an interesting comment, which I've had to rethink a little recently. His comment was that civilization advances one funeral at a time, which is a kind of maudlin way of looking at societal advance. But, I mean, let's face it, you've got people that have, let's say, in some contexts, retrograde thinking about race, about nationalism, hate for different peoples, different countries, different nations. And as those people die, that is what gives the next generation an opportunity to advance. But of course, that opportunity is not guaranteed. And I think to some extent, because I'm going to be waiting for what I consider the answer to the most predictable argument that the Republicans had against Social Security in the 1930s, I think there's also the danger that every generation has to relearn the mistakes of the generation before. So there's the opportunity for advancement, but there are no guarantees.
Yeah, that's what Oprah Winfrey was saying about the racism, that a whole generation has to just pass on, and then hopefully the next one will be less racist, and so on and so forth.
I think since about 2000, I think that the far right wing led, I think to a greater extent than now, but nonetheless led by Rush Limbaugh, they have constantly tried to push that envelope that being able to express racist feelings and racist ideas in public are part of personal freedom, which they are. I'm not going to say no. But on the other hand, I think that up until about the year 2000, when Rush was really getting in gear and the conservatives were kind of in the ascendancy with Newt Gingrich and the Republican Congress, up until about the year 2000, I was saying with confidence that while there was still racism, the expression of racism in public had become about as acceptable as spitting on the sidewalk. And unfortunately, in the last 14 years, I think that that has changed. I think the open expression of racism has unfortunately gotten, I'm not going to say more acceptable, but more accepted, if you kind of know what I mean. Well, I thank you for calling, Robert. I think I put you on the spot on a couple of these things, so I appreciate your hanging around. Thanks for calling. We'll see if someone else comes up with at least my idea of what the most predictable arguments Republicans had against Social Security was. You are listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston. We have open lines. The phone number is 713-526-5738. Also known as 713-526-KPFT. One of the things that I ran across in my research on Social Security, there is a website, it's an article really, called How Corporate Moderates Created the Social Security Act, dot, 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 and then tried to undermine it later. Written by a gentleman by the name of G. William Domhoff. I have a link to it. It's not a short article, I will warn you now. I copied it into Word, copy-pasted it into Word, and it runs over 50 pages. From what I had been reading up until that point, I just ran across it tonight before I came in here. From what I had run across up until that point and then scanning through the article, I would say that informationally, It's probably a really, really good piece. The names, Francis Perkins, especially. Francis Perkins was extremely important in the passage, in the creation and the passage of the Social Security Act of 1935. She was Secretary of Labor from 1933 to 1945, so literally the whole time that Roosevelt was president, with the possible exception of how long it took to approve her to the cabinet. She was the Secretary of Labor. She is the longest-serving Secretary of Labor to this point, I believe, in American history. No one has served that long, and since we don't have three-term presidents anymore, probably no one will. She was one of the strongest advocates for the Social Security Act. She was also the first woman to ever serve in a presidential cabinet. There's just so much in the history that is worth reading. I have the links on the site. There is one thing I want to play. I asked Egberto to get a clip for me. It goes back to the more things change, the more they stay the same. That you keep hearing conservatives, and I suppose liberals, making the same arguments over and over and over again. And during FDR's 1936 reelection campaign, he was responding to the fact that Republicans kept backseat driving and Monday morning quarterbacking his New Deal policies. So this was what FDR had to say, I think it was in October of 1936. Egberto, can you play that clip?
Of course we believe these things. We believe in Social Security. We believe in work for the unemployed. We believe in saving homes. Cross our hearts and hope to die. We believe in all these things. But we do not like the way the present administration is doing them. Just turn them over to us. We will do all of them. We will do more of them. We will do them better. And most important of all, the doing of them will not cost anybody anything.
That is one of the greatest quotes from FDR, and he's got a lot of great quotes. That is called the Let Me Warn You speech. And you really need to, again, I have a link for tonight's show on the website, or you can look it up, Let Me Warn You by FDR. What's so cool about that speech is the whole time you can hear in his voice that he's smiling, because it's hysterical. And what's even more hysterical 80 years later is the Republicans are still saying the same thing. We support all of them. We will do more of them. We will do them better, and they won't cost anybody anything. Paul Ryan, anybody? Well, actually, maybe not Paul Ryan. He actually tells you he just wants to do less. We're going to do less of them. We're going to do them less. They're not going to cost anybody anything because we're just not going to do them.
And it's better for you.
And it's better for you because it will create character. It'll make you more independent because nothing gets your attention like starvation and homelessness. That's what gets your attention. So, I mean, it's kind of funny. What Republicans often say is people need jobs. People need to work. We shouldn't be giving them unemployment. We should be giving them jobs. You know, what's funny is Roosevelt did exactly that thing. He created the work Work Program, the WPA, to keep it short. He created the Civilian Conservation Corps. So a lot of the national park work was done by the CCC. You had buildings constructed and decorated by construction workers and artists working for the WPA. So we gave them jobs. We gave them jobs. They did infrastructure, which creates intrinsic material value, long-term value, value that in many cases we have even today until someone like Maine Governor LePage decides to take off a mural from a Labor Department building because it's too pro-labor. And who was it, Egberto, you may remember, who was it that said that Labor Day is a day for us to remember the job creators? Was that Paul Ryan also?
I don't remember, but the kind of thinking that these guys have just, it's just bewildering.
It's bewildering. You know, my stepdaughter, one of the courses, actually her major in college was psychology with a minor in political science and government. And, you know, there are terms you hear that sometimes you just don't quite get them until you hear it explained to you or an example. So, for example, for many years, I had a problem really understanding the concept of passive aggression. And then one day I was in a customer's house. I was a drapery installer at the time. And I made it a policy to always ask them to put their pets away. I mean, I requested that not only for my safety, but as the cops say, for the pet's safety, because I didn't want anything getting out of the house that we had to chase down, and I didn't want to get bitten. So this woman had these two little noisy dogs. I'm a dog guy. I really, dogs are my favorite animals as a species. But these two little dogs were just yapping, 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 and of course they were hanging around her legs. And I said, could you please put the dogs away? And she said, oh, no, they won't hurt you. They're very nice. They're very friendly. And I asked her again, no, really, they're very friendly. They won't hurt you. So we had this discussion. Actually, this is not passive aggression. This is just resistance. I'm giving you the wrong example. But it's still a good story. So I can't force her to put the dogs away. I mean, after all, I'm a contractor working essentially for her. The moment I turned my back to go back out the door to start taking stuff out of my truck, the tools and the hardware and whatnot, as soon as I turned my back, one of these noisy little runty dogs ran up behind me, clamped his teeth around my calf, right through my blue jeans, drew blood. Not tons of blood, but blood. Now, the woman was highly apologetic. This is not passive aggression, by the way. This is just annoying. I'll have to give you the other example later. But it's like, this little dog, this is only the second time in my life I was ever bitten. I have not been bitten by a dog since. I get along really well with animals. I can feel when it's like, hey, I'm friendly, come to me, or like, oh, I think I want you to keep my personal space unviolated. So, never turn your back on a runty, noisy little dog, or a big, noisy dog for that matter. Back away. Don't turn your back. As soon as you turn your back, you're prey. Just remember that. That's true for most animals. The passive-aggressive story, actually, was a woman, a similar situation, a woman who had a dog. I was asking her to put it away. She kept saying, okay. This is really passive aggression. She kept saying, okay, I'll put it away. Okay, I'll put it away. She never put the dog away, so I had to work the whole time with the dog around. And he was a nice dog. He wasn't like one of these really bad yappy dogs. But the fact is, I was a stranger in his territory. And I could not work as fast as I wanted to because sudden movements alarmed him. That's just how dogs are. That's how animals are. If you're in their space, especially, and you're a stranger, even if they're accepting you, if you move too fast, you startle them. Next thing you know, man, you're chum. And I don't mean a friend. I mean chum, like in bait. So, passive aggression. The term I learned from my stepdaughter was cognitive dissonance. Cognitive dissonance is when you can hold two mutually exclusive thoughts in your head at the same time and not see the conflict. So, one example of cognitive dissonance that I see on the conservative side is people who say they love the Constitution, but they don't love all of it. And then there are the people that say, I love America, I just hate the government. This is cognitive dissonance. If you love America and you hate the government, what part of America is it exactly that you love? Is it the Purple Mountain's majesty? You want to be a mountain man, mountain woman? Okay, you can do that. Cognitive dissonance. We want to take care, well, cognitive dissonance. The let me warn you speech. We will do more of it. We will do it better. And the best part of all is it won't cost anybody anything. Cognitive dissonance. You are listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig. A dearth of calls this week. I would like to hear from some folks. 713-526-5738, 90.1 FM in Houston. I would like to mention that starting, I believe, April 30th, KPFT is going to have its quarterly fundraising drive. You can beat the rush by going to kpft.org. and clicking on the tip jar. And if you click on the tip jar during this show, that money will be in support of ThinkWing Radio, in addition primarily to support for KPFT. Now, understand, I don't get a dime. I do this for fun. I do this because I just love talking to you guys and occasionally hearing you talk back to me. But you can go to the tip jar, kpft.org, make a donation, $5, $100, $75, $5 a month. You're given whole bunches of options. And KPFT and I would really, really appreciate your support for your community radio station. Okay, enough of that. You're going to hear plenty of that in a couple of weeks. I've got Mike from Cyprus on the line. Mike, you're on the air. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine. I have a quick observation and then a possible answer to your question.
Okay.
I speak from that part of the political spectrum, the right. You know, those people over there, that's where I come from. My question is, what are we going to do about the fact that we've known for a long time that this wonderful system we've had is going broke? And our political class doesn't want to touch the issue of making the adjustments necessary to keep it from going broke. We had a chance when Obama took office. Simpson dragged it back up there and said, what are we going to do? They won't fetch it. They won't fetch it until it goes broke, I guess.
It's the American way, isn't it? Never let a crisis go unused.
Well, no, but it used to be an emergency. The political class will address it. But now we're on a 2-year, 4-year, 6-year cycle. Nobody can think about doing anything that's going to hurt their election chances 2 years from now. So the fact that Social Security is going broke in 12, 15 years, they don't want to address that because it's going to hurt a little bit, and that might hurt their reelection chances. So that they're not addressing it. But my question, your question about what do right-wingers complain about in Social Security?
Now, we're talking in 1935 when they were arguing against the creation of Social Security. What was one of their key arguments?
Well, I'm not familiar with the 1935 arguments, but I would say something that's in there structurally is whatever good things it may do, it reduces the individual's ability to accumulate private wealth. The system provides security in old age, security for survivors. But it doesn't let people at the bottom accumulate wealth, which if they got to keep some of their money and accumulated wealth, they could pass that on to future generations.
Now, of course,
we're capitalists. Remember, that's the way we think about accumulating capital. So the Social Security system doesn't do that.
That's
Can I tell you
true.
This? I'm a flaming right winger, and I have their check deposited in my account every month. So I'm not trying to put them out of business.
So you're a right-wing lover of Social Security.
I don't know that I'm a lover of it, but it's part of the system. You know what I'm saying? It's like I don't question it. It was there when I was born. So it's always been there, and they've always taken their money. So I'm not against the system, and I don't know that it can be modified, but I do know that looking at a horizon of 12 to 15 years and we're adding SSI to the system, just hand over fist, and the political class doesn't want to touch the issue because it will involve a little pain for some of the adjusted people. So they're just going to keep kicking that can down the road until it looks like an emergency.
Let me ask you a question.
It'd be better if they could do it now as opposed to when it gets closer to you're out of money.
As a right-wing beneficiary of Social Security, now, on the one hand, you're saying we really need to, essentially, and I agree with you, we need to address any future problems with the Social Security Trust Fund now, because doing it now requires less pain than doing
That's
it all
right.
at once later. But
tell your elected representative that. You know, tell Obama that. Tell any of them down
well,
there
now, wait
that.
A minute.
But
let's,
they'll tell you, wait
let's
a minute.
Let's not blame
if I,
Obama.
If I cut Grandma a nickel or change the ages or do anything that looks like I'm dishing out some pain to my signature socialist system, I could lose the next election. I won't be around.
Let me make a point here. First of all, I was just talking about passive aggression. If Republicans refuse to make any changes in Social Security in 12 or 15 or 20 years, and you can argue the timeline, it will go bankrupt. If you're against Social Security, that's what you want. So what incentive do Republicans have to help to properly fund Social Security? Literally, by obstructing it, they passive-aggressively get the result they want.
I would make two points real quickly. That these Republicans you're talking about, they have a wide range of views about how to solve problems or what way to go for this. It's not like one Republican view. We love George Bush and we want to bomb another country real soon. We're not all in agreement on that.
I think that the Republican Party is more unified now than it has been in many years, and unfortunately it's unified way to the right.
I'm so happy that the right finally woken up and is trying to take our party back.
Until your Social Security goes bankrupt.
Oh, no. It's not this. I'm telling you, you can't blame the fact that they won't. Well, I'm not going to pick that issue up when Simpson brought it through when he came in the office and said, no, oh, Social Security is going both. Let's address that now. Great. You know.
Do you want your Republican representative?
Democrats are not anxious to try to fix that problem either.
Now, wait a minute. I'm not going to say that every single Democrat agrees with me, agrees with the liberal position. There, as you say, there is a range of Republican view. There is a range of Democratic view. But I think that
the Democratic view is more taxes. Why don't we just raise the tax rate on them, and that'll solve everything? I mean, what is the Democratic view of how to solve the problem?
Egberto has a question for you.
Let me ask you one quick question. I think you just brought up the issue of taxes, and you brought up the issue of Social Security, and you're in Social Security as well. But my question is, do you think you deserve the Social Security that you're getting right now?
They're still taking money from me.
I know, but
taking money from me for 40 or something years, and 1/8 of my earnings have always gone up to Washington, D.C., where they spend it and then print some treasuries and throw them in the box.
So based on what you're saying, your Social Security is not an entitlement. It's, it's not an entitlement. It's an earned benefit. It is an earned benefit.
An earned benefit.
So it's not an entitlement.
Before I was born, you know, it is just a system we have. I'm not arguing against that system. I've offered what is one of the complaints that doesn't allow for private wealth building. Capitalists are big on that.
I would argue that if somebody is already poor, they're probably not going to be building a lot of wealth. They're probably going to be buying food and shelter.
Well, they're going to be paying 1/8 of their wages in Washington. I'm not trying to say I want to kill the system or there's a bad system. My point is, the political class, not just Republicans, but the whole political class of 2-4-6 year reelected officials doesn't want to handle the ugly work of restructuring our entitlement programs so that they're not going to drive us to the wall.
Egberto,
they won't do it.
Mike, Egberto, one quick question.
One more thing, and then we're going to let you go for the next caller.
One quick question. Why is it that you think the people who've worked so hard and paid that 7-point-something% in taxes should have to take a cut, while those who are the very few that make millions should not pay that same percentage into the system, which would actually make it solvent? And that's the basic question.
Here's I'm not arguing with that. You're supposed
to. Oh, okay. I'm glad to hear that.
Mike is a fun guy.
Yeah, he's great.
I'll give you a solution maybe Democrats can solve, okay? Right now, we're taxing people on Social Security. It's a flat tax, and it's on the working classes. Over $100,000, you don't pay it. Make those bastards on the anything over $100,000. Pay 1 or 2% Social Security.
You're a Democrat.
You should get some of the money there. I'm not in favor of screwing some little old lady that's 50 years old and has paid into the system for 30 years and then changed the deal on her. That's dirty.
So, Mike,
I agree with you.
I think what you are is a conservative Democrat or a very moderate Republican.
I'm not a moderate Republican. I want to attack Syria. I'm ready to attack Syria. I'm pissed.
Okay. All right. We're going to let it go. That's a different show. But I thank you. You've been a lot of fun to talk to. I hope you call again. I'm going to reiterate my question because we're getting now to the last 15 or 20 minutes of the show, and we don't have a lot of time, but I'm going to reiterate the question. What was one of the standard arguments in 1935 that Republicans used against the Social Security Act that would sound very, very familiar today? Gary from Cyprus, you're on the air. Thanks for calling. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing all right. I first want to complain about this nebulous terminology that I hear everywhere between conservative, liberal, liberal, conservative.
Okay.
I think it was Will Rogers that, when asked if he was a liberal or a conservative, said, well, what's the topic?
Okay.
You can't be party line and make sense in any case. But I think the answer to your question, and this is not the comment I'm calling about, is that they said it was basically going to lead to communism. Or socialism, is that right?
That is one of the things they said. But I'll tell you the thing they said that sounds so familiar today. Every time there's any kind of fiscal reform talked about, the strongest argument they came up with, they felt, against Social Security was that it would cost jobs. 80 years and nothing changes.
Well, anyway, I heard you talking about the Republicans and their points of view, and I think the great irony about the Republican, or let's say nebulous term, conservatives, is that they are opposed to government intrusion and the nanny state, and that the government will take your guns away and the government makes you buy insurance. But on the other hand, if the government is throwing you in prison for smoking marijuana or the government is preventing you from having an abortion, no problem.
Cognitive dissonance.
Cognitive dissonance.
So they're against government intrusion, except when it comes to intravaginal probes.
Exactly. So what's the topic? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gary. I appreciate your call.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Open lines, 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig and Egberto Willis on KPFT 90.1 FM Houston, and we're going to be going until a couple of minutes before 11 o'clock. I was watching, my wife is Chinese, scientist, English speaker now, second language. She's very good with English. Her mother, however, doesn't speak any English. I don't speak any Chinese. It actually makes for a terrific relationship with my mother-in-law, I think, because she's a very nice person, basically, and we can't have any misunderstandings because we don't have any understandings. But the point I wanted to make is because my mother-in-law is Chinese and doesn't speak English, we've gone from watching like Rachel Maddow and Lawrence O'Donnell during dinner to watching CCTV and channel 51.4, I think it is, Taiwanese Chinese radio. CCTV is People's Republic Chinese Radio, but in English, 55.6. And they were doing a report today, and of course you have to understand, it's a government-owned station, kind of like RT Radio, RT.com, Russia Today. So you can kind of take it for what it's worth. There's information, there's a point of view, but you also have to understand that at some level, it is government-sanctioned news. That being said, they were doing a report on the gun culture in general and the gun culture in Alaska specifically. And among the people they interviewed, there's apparently something called the Machine Gun Association of Alaska, which, something like that. But it's basically a machine gun club. And apparently in Alaska, you can have the chief police official, even though automatic weapons are technically illegal in the United States, apparently there is an exception in the law for individuals that are specifically excluded by permission of the chief police official. So you've got some people that have fully automatic machine guns. And there's this one gentleman who runs this club that was being interviewed, and he went into his, it wasn't a gun safe, it was really a gun armory. He said he's a collector. I can appreciate that. He's a collector of various kinds of weapons, older weapons, modern weapons. And he was asked how many he had, and he said, oh, I don't know, 180, 200 handguns, semi-automatics, automatics. And what I found interesting, because it occurred to me that you hear this a lot, when he was talking about why it's okay for everybody to own guns and nobody should really be concerned, you know, we just have to make sure the crazies don't have guns, however you want to define that, and that sports cars, he actually used specifically sports cars kill more people every year than guns do. And he went through all of these things, why guns are safe and other things are more dangerous. But then he came to what I consider the key. This is the one that they try to bury under the detritus of all their other arguments. And we need to be able to protect our freedom against an oppressive government. So really, this guy at his core is a wannabe seditious insurrectionist. At his core, he is the arbiter of when the government becomes so intrusive that he should bear arms against it. Now, it's worth noting that the Constitution actually has provisions for a change of government. The Congress can call for a constitutional convention. The states can call for a constitutional convention. We can change the entire Constitution like they did in, what was it, 1781 or 1783. But this gentleman, with his armory, and other individuals with their armories, they have the right to decide when to change the government. We had this incident at the Bundy Ranch where this guy says, I obey all state laws, but no federal laws. So he's decided that while other ranchers are paying the federal government to graze on federal land, he is not. And to enforce this, he got a whole bunch of militia people. I'm not going to say he got, but he ended up acquiring by one means or another a whole bunch of militia people and armed people from around the United States. There was this one guy who said, we're going to put the women in front because that way if they shoot, the women go first and it'll look horrible. And, you know, it occurred to me that this could be the foundation for a new Fox situation comedy called something like, you know, the Bundys married with armed insurrectionists. Yeah, okay. Egberto's laughing. He's a good audience. I don't know about you guys. We've got Ike from Houston. At first, I thought it was a typo. I thought it was another mic. But, Ike, how are you doing? You're on the air.
You hear me?
I can hear you.
Good. Well, you know what? I was just, this Social Security, man, why do they charge interest? And I filed, it's like, very many years ago, two times, I was not able to pay whatever I supposed to pay because I called myself self-employed or whatever, and I was not making no money to pay them. I mean, so all I was making the money was to pay the rent. Okay.
Yeah, that's the problem with a regressive flat tax.
And my light bill, I couldn't have no light. And my apartment, it was dark. I mean, just dark because I couldn't afford to pay the light bill.
That's why a lot of people are self-employed. Because being self-employed, they can't afford their Social Security taxes. They can't afford their medical insurance. And sometimes that's enough to drive people away from a small business.
Well, what I'm saying is, basically, I'm getting letters from them to pay me this much, pay me this much, pay me this much, and they build the interest, interest, yes. Interest.
And penalties, no doubt.
And, yes. And now it is so much that I don't know how to deal with that.
How many years back are we talking?
Huh? I'm talking about 2000, start from 2004.
Whoa.
So today. And I paid this year whatever I made, and they took it because they said, oh, you owe us this much money.
I assume you've been in contact with them. They're not just sending you letters and garnishing wages. I assume you've been in contact with the IRS.
I'd love to be in contact to solve the problem. The problem is, why do they charge interest?
Because otherwise it's profitable to withhold taxes. They want to make sure it is not profitable to withhold taxes. I mean, that's the premise. If they made it cheap to not pay them, you wouldn't pay them. If it's more expensive to keep your money than to pay them, then you're going to send the money to them. I mean, it's a crude, brutal logic, basically.
Well, I really do not know. I have to sue IRS or what? I don't really know.
I would say there are probably nonprofit legal services that you could call. I actually put one on my...
Yes, I hear that. I really did hear that. Yes, I went to a few places. They told me that you go here and there. And I was paying this year's taxes, I mean last year's tax. And the rest of them that I owed and everything, they couldn't do it. They would say, no, I'm not going to do the back taxes and stuff like that.
You know, I really can't speak to this topic because I don't know enough about the law. But the one thing I would tell you is there are nonprofit free legal services that work on contributions from well-off individuals and companies. You need to get yourself legal representation. You're going to have to negotiate something with the IRS. You can't just ignore them and you can't just let them take your money, because this can go on for the rest of your life if you're not making enough money. You really, really need legal advice.
I know. I know. But my question was, why they... I owe them very little money because I said I'm self-employed, this and that, for 2 years or more. And then they keep selling me.
It keeps going up. It's like a loan shark.
Interest.
Yeah, it's like a loan shark. The more you owe, the more you owe. And you never get even, which is one of the reasons you need a lawyer to try to negotiate some kind of a settlement with them, hopefully with lower interest and lower penalties, something that you can actually manage based on what you're earning. And you may have to start looking for an employer if you can't make enough to pay your taxes. I don't know what else to tell you, Ike. I need to let you go, but I thank you for calling.
Okay,
I hope you get your situation settled out, because that stuff is no fun at all. John from Houston, I appreciate your holding. You're on the air. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing all right. Good evening to you.
Good evening.
Okay. One thing I was going to point out, I kind of couldn't hear the second half of the section on the Alaska Machine Gun Enthusiasts Club.
Okay.
But I was going to point out that possession is actually highly regulated rather than absolutely illegal in terms of machine gun.
Say that again, highly regulated as opposed to absolutely legal? Is that what you said?
Illegal, yes. I think you said that possession of machine guns is absolutely illegal.
I don't think I used the word absolutely, but I do
think
that
I think you just said illegal, but anyways, that was one thing. And the other thing I was going to point out that may be important in terms of the topic immediately before that of social rather than economic conservatives, that is small government and no abortions, is that in addition to cognitive dissonance, which may apply to some number of voters and politicians, you also have the fact that these are two separate axes, and that a substantial religious conservative base, which simply glommed on to the earlier Republican Party.
The fiscal conservatives basically attracted the social religious conservatives in an effort to expand their base, and it was like inviting the camel into the tent.
Indeed.
That's an interesting point. I like that.
Yeah, so anyways, I wanted to bring that up to point out it's very important to not accidentally make something of a straw man or some sort of simulacrum or effigy of the Republican as opposed to a composite of people which may have some good ideas and may have some valid motivations going the wrong way to someone nonsensical committing cognitive dissonance and hypocrisy on a daily basis.
You're a very, very smart guy. I like you, John.
Well, thank you.
I like you. You use big words and complicated thoughts and everything. I like you. The thing about the machine guns, I think what I said, because it was in the context of this particular story, I'm pretty sure it's what I said. I did not say absolutely illegal. What I said is that automatic weapons are illegal according to federal law, but there is apparently an exception, which I didn't know until tonight, that the head police official of a different community, of various communities, can make individual exceptions for automatic weapons. Now, this was news to me.
Okay, yes. Now, I wasn't, unfortunately, following the second half of the story, so I wasn't sure if you're talking about manufacture or possession.
Possession.
Okay, well, the thing about possession is that they can be obtained through a stack of paperwork and a long waiting period. The ATF can allow you to buy an existing machine gun. The collection of machine guns, which civilians can purchase, became fixed in 1986 with the Hughes Amendment to an act that I can't remember its name. And anything before then, those in the civilian market, can be sold from one civilian to another, assuming that they go through the stack of paperwork.
So they're kind of grandfathered.
Sorry?
They're kind of grandfathered.
Yes, it is after a fashion grandfathered.
Okay. All right, I have one more caller, and I hate to leave anybody on the hook. I thank you for calling, John. I hope you'll call back. David, you're on the air. You've got about 45 seconds. Can you keep it succinct?
Yes. I was wondering why Walmart can have their workers do life insurance, and the benefactor is Walmart. I'll give you that, and just curious what your thoughts are on
that. Well, what do you mean when you say life insurance?
Well, it was one of these shows I was watching. It guaranteed that this was the truth, that Walmart would take people's benefacts of a life insurance after they would hire these elderly people that would work, you know.
There are companies, now I know what you're talking about. There are companies that will themselves take life insurance on employees. It's kind of like key personnel insurance, although they're not so key anymore. And because the company is paying the premium and because the company has a stake in having this person do this job, and yes, they actually, and they should have laws against this, but you do have employers that insure employees and then take death benefits if they pass away while they're employed. I have to let you go. I've got about 20 seconds to sign off. Thank you for the folks who have called. Thank you for listening to Think Wing Radio on KPFT 90.1 FM. You can go to my website at thinkwingradio.com, and I will just sign off with this. Remember that if the 99% vote, the 1% don't matter. Have a great week.
The 9th edition of Latin Wave, New Films from Latin America, takes place May 1st through the 4th at the Museum of Fine Arts Houston. Latin Wave presents Houston premieres of movies from many of the leading and emerging talents of contemporary Latin American cinema. Many of these films reach Houston after winning awards at prestigious festivals around the globe, and some have gone on to become their country's nominee for the Best Foreign Language category at the Academy Awards. This year's festival includes new films from Argentina, Colombia, Costa Rica, the Dominican Republic, Guatemala, Mexico, Uruguay, and Venezuela. Five of these up-and-coming filmmakers will come to Houston to introduce their films and lead Q&As afterwards. Schedule and ticket information for the Latin Wave Film Festival at mfah.org/film or at 713-639-7300.
KPFT Houston.
Want to help KPFT but
can't make the drive out to the little house on Lovett Boulevard? A great way to aid KPFT is as simple as logging into Facebook and Twitter. Connect with KPFT via social media. It's simple. Just visit twitter.com/KPFT and facebook.com/KPFT Houston. Then share our links and donate form with your social circles on Twitter and Facebook. Chances are you know people who may not know KPFT, and you'll introduce them to the fantastic music, interviews, news, and more that you hear daily on this radio station. Remember, just visit twitter.com/KPFT or facebook.com/KPFT Houston to promote and support KPFT online. This is Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT.